This is CliffCentral.com. I'd like to make myself
believe that planet Earth turns slowly. I remember this song. It's hard to say that I'd rather stay. Now don't spoil it, Sia. I saw
the look in your eye.
Claim it.
I saw Mabale tweeted something, and she's not the most prolific tweeter in the world, but you must know something really affects her life if she decides to tweet about it. And she's like, there's nothing worse than someone like Sia who thinks that they can sing Prince.
Purple Rain?
Yes, sis. Bad, right?
Okay.
And then have the audacity to ask, guys, don't I sound like Prince?
Yo.
Two parts.
What a cheek.
Of this answer that I need to give. Firstly, Mabale Moloi, you claim that odd singing in Fireflies.
Okay,
you were the one.
Just now when you said no, Sia, when they were singing along to Fireflies, that was actually me.
Thank you. Secondly, I have a great range.
No.
My tone might not be the best as I've come to discover.
No, you do
might
not.
When was this a discussion point?
Excuse me. I will swiftly move past that statement.
No, you
and
don't.
Say, I have great falsetto. So when it got to that point, that high pitched point in Purple Rain, Prince and I was in this.
No, stop it.
Same level.
Stop it.
Thank you.
You're
goodbye.
Not on the same level as Prince. You're on the same level as his sister.
Taika Nelson.
That's how you are. Ooh. All right. Enough about Sia singing. Good morning. It is the first day of February, and you can stretch and yawn and hopefully have a much less financially straining month than January has been for most people. But I just want to start with one thing that's been a bit of a bugbear of mine for a long time. And I want to, first of all, say thank you to Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, who is the first person during this whole Life Estimeni situation who's actually made an apology right up front to the families who lost their loved ones. I'm going to play the clip for you because I think you can hear how emotional he was. Thank God there's someone in government who can feel something for these people who've lost. 140 people died in this disaster, and it's a disaster because it could have been averted by humans who could have made better decisions, among them Dani Mahlangu, the head of Gauteng Mental Health, the head of department of that department in the Gauteng Health Department. All of these people, none of them have taken responsibility. Here's Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, who says, I'm sorry. That's all that anybody was after. It's like, just someone to say sorry. You can't bring them back. This is all we wanted.
To both the families and relatives of the deceased, and those who are still living, and to the whole nation at large, we have really wronged them in a way unimaginable. I know that the emotional and psychological trauma that the families and relatives of the deceased, as well as living patients, have endured is extremely unbearable and even impossible to quantify. When I read the UMBA's report about how people were bundled in vans and tied with sheets, and how they were chosen like, as he described it, like cattle at an auction. I couldn't just imagine in our new democracy and in a department where we put up an act and put in as the objectives, one of the objectives, human rights. And human rights come and be breached in this manner, in a way that is reminiscent of our apartheid era, not the democracy. It's very painful. That's why I feel, you know, personally betrayed that colleagues who were working with could do something like that.
Well, there you go. Finally, someone who's just done the right thing and apologized and acknowledged how people feel.
The first and only apology?
Well, it's certainly the only high-profile one that we've had, because some of the real underlings, they realized that they were going to have a, you know, blamed on them anyway. So they started apologizing shortly into the process. But, you know, here you've got Dikgang Moseneke, who's trying to put this together and try to figure out who's responsible. I mean, someone really has to carry the can on this. And ultimately, all we wanted was an apology. It doesn't... There's no amount of money that can change hands and can bring these people back to life. There's no amount of hand-wringing or finger-pointing that's going to do the deal. So really, an apology is the best thing you could do up there. And for Aaron Motsoaledi, who ultimately has to be the guy right at the top because he's in charge of national health, to just say sorry must have gone a long way for those people who've been sitting in the hearings day after day, week after week, trying to figure out how it all went so wrong. But there we go. I just thought that he deserved just a you know, kind of an acknowledgement himself for doing the right thing. What else have we got, Mubs?
You know how we've been running the pet competition here on Cliff Central? Meowses versus Carl versus Casper's dogs versus Chi Chi the Chow Chow.
Yes.
It got intense.
Yes.
Can you imagine the horror of finding your little pets having been devoured by a python?
Oh my God.
Because that is what happened to a woman from Louis Trichardt in Limpopo. She's been left half heartbroken after a python devoured her dog.
Jesus. What kind of dog was it?
It doesn't say here, Gareth.
I hope it wasn't a big dog, because then it would be a big python.
It wouldn't have been. It was a small dog, Shane.
Oh, my God.
So, Frikkie Venter, who is a snake catcher and environmental expert, said that the incident happened.
Frikkie Venter, the snake catcher. He uses that at the LARPA every day. Hello there.
LARPA.
Hey, Frikkie, tell them again what you do for a living.
So he says that the incident happened in the 6-year-old woman's lounge, which also serves...
Oh, my God, in her house?
In her house, my guy.
He's intruding python.
Which also serves as her bedroom. And it happened in the early hours of the morning. So the woman lives on a farm, and she was aware of the snake because it is usually in the fruit orchards, right? So she's like, hey, snake. And the snake is like, hey, back. Like the two of them knew each other. She says that she saw the snake late on Saturday afternoon at her front door.
Hey, snake.
She called her dog home.
Getting a little close there.
She closed all the doors. However, she did not close the lounge windows.
Come on.
And Frikkie Venter says that this is probably how the snake got inside.
Top detective work there, Frikkie. you see these windows over here? I think this is where it came in. Oh, Frikkie solves another one. How does he do it?
Frikkie says that he suspects the python was in search of somewhere cool to rest. Now, the woman was suddenly woken up in the early hours of the morning when she heard her dog whining when the snake bit him. He says that everything happened so fast that the woman could not do anything to save the dog, and then the snake devoured the dog. Wow.
Oh,
now, Frikkie says you cannot kill this kind of snake because it is wild and it is on the list of protected species. So he captured the thing and released it on another farm far from humans.
With the dog still in it.
Oh, yes.
Wait, why can't you kill a snake like this?
He says that it's on the endangered species list.
Can't we keep it in a... But like reserve somewhere far.
Well, they released it on a farm, another farm, but that they say is far from human.
But I'd love to know how he did this, because we're talking about 6 meters of snake, I would imagine. Let's just call conservative 5.
Plus dog.
How big is Frikkie's sack? I mean, like, does he have like a special snake bucky?
This snake in particular, 3.5 meters long, okay. Ben, 50 kilograms.
Okay, so it, yeah, I mean, decent size, but not like J-Lo big.
Oh, he's talking about Anaconda.
Well, J-Lo's in that snake movie.
Yes.
Oh.
I get it.
Look at me like I'm making derogatory comments about J-Lo, see ya?
That's very sad for the little dog, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But this Frikkie, we've got to get him in here. We've got to talk to Frikkie.
Well, I mean, you can try. This all happened in Limpopo, but we can certainly try. You know.
Oh, listen, by the way, we're going to reveal the winner of the pet parade competition tomorrow.
Oh.
Is that right, Sia?
I will get confirmation.
I think it's tomorrow, because there were three contenders in the lead.
Has the voting closed yet?
Yeah, voting closed yesterday. So there are no more opportunities to vote, but there is R1,000 up for grabs. And remember, you can also send in your own pet picture. So you can do that by going to cliffcentral.com and you'll find all the details to enter there. It's all part of One Plan Pet Insurance and Cliff Central's plan to bring your pet to fame and fortune. You can win some money. You can show off your pet, see who looks most like their animal, because that happens a lot of the time. And you can go and vote for your own stuff once we put those up as well. And we'll let everybody join in, you know. One Plan Pet Insurance, by the way, if you want to get hold of them, I'll give you all those details a little bit later on too. It's a very, very cool product. For those people who want to make sure that there aren't any nasty surprises, I mean, who doesn't go to the vet every now and then because they're worried about this or that, or the pet gets hurt, or there's some kind of problem with its health. And then you get there and you suddenly realize, oh my God, this is going to cost me an arm and a leg, let alone the pet. SMS Cliff to 31644 now and One Plan will call you back. That's Cliff, CLIFF, to 31644. And One Plan Pet Insurance will help you. They can even give you the claim amount you need for a vet visit before you even see the vet. You don't have to go there with your wallet, whip out a card and hope that they're going to pay you back like most insurance would. These guys will give you the money before you even see the vet. Ensure the health of your pets from R133 a month and up. SMS Cliff to 31644. All right. How will you feel if you've won, Ben?
Justified, really.
Okay.
Look, I mean, Meowsles was the only cat. It's pretty clear that she should have won from the start. You know, Carl's criminal history, obviously it must come into this.
Sorry?
Criminal.
And Casper had two dogs, so that's kind of cheating.
I'm sorry. How is Carl a criminal again?
Oh, we've spoken about that bird incident before.
Yeah, we.
Oh, he killed a bird.
Yeah.
And then Meowsles.
Just forget about that kind of stuff.
And then Meowsles almost killed you.
No.
Again, just conveniently leave out that information.
That. Yeah.
You just got to live in a world of facts, my buddy. Then this fake news emotion get in the way of you all the time.
Yes, Will Smith killed Tupac. You tell me about fake news.
Listen.
Okay.
You notice how I didn't even mention it anymore. You guys mentioned it because you know it's true.
I don't know exactly.
All right, what else is going on in the news?
All right, here's an interesting one for all the people interested in legalese, and then also for the rest of us as well, because Facebook have finding themselves in a rather interesting lawsuit. It involves the family of a Cleveland man who was killed, and the family are now saying that Facebook could have done more to prevent his murder because his murder was reported on the platform. So it involves the killing of Robert Godwin, 74 years old, was recorded and made viewable on the social network last April. Steve Stevens, the man who killed Godwin, announced his intent to kill someone on Facebook prior to the murder. And then Stevens recorded the shooting and then uploaded it onto Facebook. Stevens later logged onto Facebook Live and described the attack. He eventually killed himself after a police chase. So now the family is alleging that Facebook is responsible for the wrongful death of their loved one.
No, honey.
The lawsuit was filed on January the 19th, and it says that Facebook acted with intentional, willful, malicious, in bad faith, and in reckless disregard for the rights of Mr. Godwin.
No. Not on. You can't blame Facebook for this. That's just where it all kind of was broadcast. It's certainly not Facebook's fault. Are you telling me that if a hurricane strikes the coast of America and there's a news reporter who's filming that hurricane as it hits the coast and some person drives straight into the eye of the hurricane and gets flung around and smashed to pieces and then hurled out to sea and dies, that's CNN's fault because they've got a reporter watching the incident live from the coast? Don't be ridiculous. You're just after Facebook money. I hate when white trash kills itself and then wants money from, like, Facebook.
That escalated so quickly.
Well, I mean, the guy's name was Steven Stevens, for God's sake. Really?
Steve Stevens.
Yeah, exactly. Just leave it alone. Get out of here.
Well, I'm pretty...
I see Kim Kardashian's shown some titty. this morning.
Oh,
anybody want to know?
It's another world in Kim K. It's another day in Kim K.
Yeah, sure,
someone
sure.
just sent me the screenshot. Kim says to Kim, "I haven't been mentioned in the news in almost 3 days." And then someone says, "Show a titty." And there's a picture of her with her braided hairstyle, so it's very recent, and her big ass in a. She's in a thong, and then she's wearing like a fur coat, and she's displaying 1.5 titties.
1.5.
Yes.
Okay.
You wanted. What do you think of the pic, Mubs? You can see it from where you are.
Look, she's got nice titties. Why do I say titties? She's got nice breasts.
There we go.
They're nice.
Started that.
They're ample. They're round. I mean, they've obviously, you know, been. Reconstructed, but they look good.
Mm. Feel free to go onto her Instagram for many, many more like that.
Yeah. Oh, really? She's got lots of.
Oh, no, no, no. She dropped
it's a
like,
whole series.
It's an album. It's a photo album.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why does it look like it's amateurish? She didn't get a proper photographer in?
I think that's the look that they go for these days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there we are. There's some amateur Kim Kardashian titty pictures.
Suck a muck of this.
Right. Yeah. What's wrong, Ben?
I want to know what kind of phone she used, so I don't buy that phone, you know, because I'm looking for a new
terrible
phone. I don't want the whatever filter that is. I think her camera is not so great.
Oh. The irony of the money that probably went into all
exactly.
of this
for
to not look like
that was,
there was
a
money
that
involved.
Was a professional shoot.
Yeah.
Someone flew in from somewhere for that shoot.
Yes.
Warren says, "Please, Sia, do not sing. I will put on radio and drive off the edge of a cliff."
See,
didn't sing today. Not I.
But that's the whole thing about what you do.
Amanda.
The person's going to die.
Our own Amanda Romberg says, "It's Puzza Thursday and I'm super excited about this one." All right.
Ooh. Amanda's coming of age. Wait, that sounds bad. Amanda's reaching a milestone.
Why?
Well, the whole 21st.
Oh, when is it?
Soon.
When's her birthday? Hey, Sia, don't we have a birthday for you?
It's, I think Amanda and I are like a day apart.
Yeah, when's your birthday?
Oh, this is actually trippy. So it's Amanda, I presume, on the 1st. Balesa is on the 2nd and I'm on the 3rd.
Oh, so it's Amanda's like, birthday today.
Is it today?
Yeah, today's the 1st.
The 1st of Feb.
Oh, yeah, I think then it might.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, then
it is. It is Amanda's birthday today.
Yay!
Happy birthday, Amanda.
Jesus,
it took us a long time to figure that out.
Connect the dots
sure.
was
I was
really
carrying
wrong.
The two and then, yeah.
Yeah. I just said I wasn't going to sing, so.
Oh, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Pour a cheerful toast and fill it. Happy anniversary. But be careful you don't fill it. Happy anniversary. Oh. Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
All right, very nice. Yay. So there we go. So it's you and then, what's Amanda, you, Palesa?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's Palesa tomorrow and then you the day after.
Yes.
You're the 3rd.
I'm on the 3rd.
Yeah.
Palesa's on the 2nd.
Right. Okay, so we've got to have some birthday cakes.
Something happened in April, guys. Mm. I don't know.
Your parents, Palesa's parents, and Amanda's parents
Ooh.
Were busy.
Damn.
The devil is busy, friend.
Don't call my parents the devil. They were just happy for freedom in South Africa. So,
is that what it was?
Conceived in April 94.
Oh.
Freedom is coming.
That's
and then
beautiful.
They also. Sorry.
So, you three are freedom babies.
Well, right. I certainly am. Palesa is 2 years older. Amanda's a year younger.
Okay,
yeah.
You're a freedom baby.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, very good. What else is in the news?
Moral of the story is Sia's not going to sing.
No.
Okay.
Yes, that's how this all started.
Yeah.
Someone was asking
you
to not
about
sing.
That?
Well, this whole discussion is as a result of someone who didn't want Sia sing.
And a refrain that only sang a few words of happy birthday. Just
right.
a few words.
What else is going on?
So Helen Ziller says that schools are not going to close if Cape Town does reach day zero.
No, because then we can at least corral the children into playgrounds and lock them in.
This was all revealed at a mass meeting of school principals and education officials in Gales River.
Uh-huh.
She said, whatever happens, we intend to keep schools open. And we intend to keep schools open with water because obviously we can't keep schools open without water, Helen said.
And then she said, can I borrow your half-used bottle of Valpre to brush my teeth, please?
And then she recorded it on Insta Live.
For sure.
She did say that there is a 60% chance that day zero will be declared. And she added that a complex plan is being activated. This plan involves using swimming pools as dams, fixing boreholes, dropping water bladders.
I'm going to drop a water bladder.
What is that?
I don't know. In my mind, I just pictured when kids fill up, like...
Hi, it's Helen.
Yes, hello, Helen.
I'm dropping a water bladder.
Okay, Helen, except Day Zero hasn't really arrived yet, so I don't think it's necessary to do all of that just yet.
I haven't flushed in 6 years.
6 years? Yes, yes.
What is the backup?
I heard a horror story. Do you want to hear a horror story?
Yes, oh, no. Yes, yes.
So I was talking to these people in Cape Town on Monday. So one guy says to me, it was one of the girls, she says to me, she lives in a block of flats. Mm-hmm. And apparently because in order to keep a sewage system working, everybody needs to flush. So when you don't flush, it blocks up and the stuff dries out in the pipe. Or you need everybody to flush at once to then clear out the system.
Yeah, turd hour. Understand? We spoke about that.
Yeah, turd hour. So, there's this block of flats. This guy goes on holiday over December. He comes back a week early. Thank God he came back a week early to check on his flat. And he's at the bottom floor. He found his whole apartment, his whole flat, knee deep in turds.
Oh, you don't bounce back from this.
From the rest of the building. Everybody else in the rest of the building's shit was all over his apartment. Because his bog, it had come down the pipes and it had gathered in his pipes and then pushed out through his toilet.
Oh.
All over the flat. Oh, yes.
Oh.
And he had to have the services come in and burn the curtains and just turn everything upside down. Oh. And basically the place was unlivable.
Oh.
Just turds, human turds from all the other people who live in that block of flats in Sea Point all over his apartment, knee deep.
Where do you go from there?
And pee and human shit.
Ben said there's no coming back from that scene.
You come back from holiday, you open the door.
You build a squatter shack on the roof of the building and you live there rather. Really?
Because that is when you go, you move to escort and you take your chances with the cannibals.
Imagine wading into your apartment after a holiday. You come back a week early. You open the door and just turds.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you go catch snakes and the popo rather.
They stream out of your house.
That might as well be a scene out of a horror movie, it is. Actually.
It is. And it's real. This is not a made-up story. This is an actual thing that happened to a guy in Cape Town. All because of these toilets that you can't flush.
Jeez.
All the people in your building, and you're like, I think that's Mabel's, and I think that's Jeff's.
Oh, yeah, there's that guy you had to carry last week. There's that shawarma guy.
Shawarma guy. All right, well, there we go. It's a true story out of Cape Town. Anything else we need to know?
Oh, man.
Well, I've got some gender equality, if you want.
Sure.
Seeing as we started the show.
Is James Bond going to be a woman?
No, it's pit crew girls.
Yes.
You know, Formula One.
Yes.
You get the women who come out in their branded outfits.
Yes.
That's sexist. There'll be no more of that. They've been banned.
Oh, okay.
And the women that accompany darts players into the darts arena. Uh-huh. It's a big thing in English culture. Also, no, you can't be objectifying women like this. But then there's all these women who make a living from doing this. They're going, I'm kind of okay with this. I'm making money, pretty happy. Totally safe environment, not feeling objectified whatsoever.
Yeah, the models.
Now I'm unemployed.
Yeah.
So it's like this, it's a real victory for feminism. And they're like, no, it's stupid. Like, this is becoming a massive online debate at the moment.
What do those pit people do? What do they actually do?
Just stand next to the drivers, the riders, the cars, whatever. They just kind of stand there.
Just stand there look pretty.
Oh, okay.
Like any other modeling.
So they're modeling. They're modeling.
But that is modeling. You are a model.
Yeah.
Look up the definition of model. It's sort of form of something. And so all these jersey wearing lefties are probably just going, oh, look at that, objectifying women. We can't have any of this. But they always forget, like, to make someone feel better, some people are actually unemployed. So, like, models, they're good looking. you got certain functions in this world. What's she going to do? She's not going to start driving the car. She's not going to suddenly get into like event
become
management.
Become the mechanic.
She's not going to suddenly win the catering contract. Some people have certain purposes in life. Although saying that, obviously, is hugely mean. Mm. You're going to be set upon by these people. So there's a whole bunch of unemployed models now because someone feels offended about them being objectified.
Yeah, but you know what? They're pretty, so they'll bounce back and they'll be fine because as we've often said on this show, pretty people will always, you know, come out best.
Yep.
They'll land a new contract.
You're right. I love these people who want to make everybody else conform to their way of seeing the world. Just stop it.
Yeah.
Stop being childish.
I saw a tweet the other day of a guy who I actually respect. He was talking about how cameramen must stop objectifying women at cricket or football or one of the two by filming them in the crowd. So women go to the football. The producer, in order to create a good live broadcast, must have interactions of the crowds, the manager, the players. It's part of a production
mix.
And
you always want to see the hot girls in the crowd.
But doing that apparently is you're objectifying women. You can't do it anymore.
Well, there go the ratings on that show.
Yeah. I mean, hashtags of Me Too are coming out.
Do you know what I watched?
Oh.
I finally saw the Baywatch movie with
good,
The Rock.
Yeah, what a movie.
It's so fantastically bad.
Yeah.
There we go.
Brilliant. Such entertainment.
But it's just down to like girls running in slow motion with their titties bouncing.
Well, not really, Gareth, actually. It's
right at the end, that's all I saw.
Well, that was like...
that was the highlight.
That was like 20 seconds of the movie.
Hasselhoff makes a cameo.
Yeah, but I mean, there's nothing to see there. Come
if
on.
Anything, The Rock and Zac Efron are objectified hugely.
Yeah,
I mean,
it offended
me for seconds on end.
They
were so badly objectified.
No, they were
not. Don't hassle the Hoff.
They were not objectified. They were fulfilling their purpose. They were there.
Male lifeguards must wear shirts.
They were
tired of this objectification.
They were fulfilling the purpose of making whichever woman or gay guy that was watching that movie just feel a little bit better by seeing their six packs.
What about us straight guys? Don't we get to see some titties?
Must we
rely on Kim Kardashian the whole time? Must we constantly leverage
breasts.
Kim? Must we constantly leverage Kim Kardashian? I mean, I just feel like it's too much. All right, here's something fun just before we get to meet Cyrus, who's a guest that we've got popping in just now. Cyrus Knight, he's a musician. He's from here in Gauteng, and we're going to find out all about his music and everything else. Here is Story, which is a fascinating story. I know you're going to love this. But before we do that, here's something fun, all right?
This has been a week of public apologies. Jo Marnie, the UKIP leader's girlfriend, said sorry for texting racist remarks about Prince Harry's girlfriend to a friend. And MP Ben Bradley apologised for his comments about police brutality and making unemployed people have vasectomies. Rachel, I think you have something to say about these apologies and public apologies in general. Ladies and gentlemen, Rachel Paris.
She's great. Listen to this.
Thank you, and thank you, Nish. And Nish, I forgive you.
I didn't apologise for anything.
Oh, dear. Well, that leads us perfectly into this week's topic, and perhaps you should pay very careful attention, Nish.
Again, I'm not sure what I'm apologising to or for. I don't know what's going on.
Quite. Now, we've all been in a situation where we've accidentally made an egregious racial slur or suggested an unemployed person should be sterilised. That kind of thing can slip out of anyone's mouth. So, this is my handy guide to making a public apology. First up, we have the "it was taken out of context" apology. This week, Jo Marnie, the girlfriend of UKIP leader Henry Bolton, apologised for saying that Prince Harry's black American fiancé will taint our royal family with her seed and pave the way for a black king and a Muslim PM. Now, I know what you're thinking, Nish. What on earth is wrong with that? Right?
That is the exact opposite of what I was thinking.
Really? Wow, I thought I could read your mind, but you're a mystery. Well, well, actually, Nish, believe it or not, some people have detected a hint of a racist undertone there. And it's prompted poor Joe to issue a statement saying, "The opinions have, to an extent, been taken out of context." Of course, there was a perfectly reasonable hidden context. And I, for one, think that that context was one of celebration. I imagine that the original conversation went something a bit like this. That black American fiancé, who I admire, will taint the royal bloodline, which it sorely needs, resulting in a black king, which would be a refreshing change. Yay for diversity! And quite possibly, when she went on to describe Islam as the cancer of this earth, the context was probably just a whimsical discussion about what star sign each religion might be. Next up, we have the pardon my French apology. MP Ben Bradley this week issued an apology for saying during the London riots that he was looking forward to the police playing Splat the Chav. He said, I apologise for these posts. I now realise this language was not appropriate. Well, Nish, I think we can all agree that the main problem with what he said is indeed one of vocabulary. It would have been absolutely fine if instead of saying splat the chav, he'd said that the police should crush the poor. That's a phrase we can all get behind, isn't it, Nish?
That is absolutely not a phrase we can all get. I don't know why these people are laughing at that.
I do. And finally, we have not a recent one, but a vintage classic in the oeuvre, which we can still learn a lot from, the If I Did That apology. Kevin Spacey had to apologise for the accusation that he'd climbed on top of then-14-year-old actor Anthony Rapp in a bedroom at a party. And he said, I honestly do not remember the encounter, but if I did behave then as he describes, I owe him the sincerest apology. So essentially he's saying, I mean, yeah, sounds like me, but I can't be expected to remember every single time I've jumped on top of a minor and tried to shag it. Be more specific. I hear you, Kev. Nish, let's try the if I did that apology in action.
Okay,
now.
Okay, fine, yeah.
So ready?
Yeah.
Nish.
Yes.
I apologise for calling you a non-threatening beta male who's tailor-made for the friend zone in last week's show. If I did.
I mean, you absolutely did.
Well, if I did, Nish, then I'm sorry.
No, I mean, there's no if. We have it on camera. It's been broadcast. 12 million people have seen it on Facebook.
Nish, if I said that, I apologise.
I mean, I don't actually mind.
That's good, because I didn't actually apologise.
That's great. So there we go. Public apologies. A little bit of a crash course for you. When we come back, we're going to meet Cyrus Knight here from Gauteng. He's a musician. You'll hear his story and a whole lot more. And you can give us a call. You know what to do. 0861-555-189 if you want to get it. Get us on WhatsApp. You can go 0797482090. You like it? It's that easy. Do it ASAP. Don't waste some time. Unforgettable. It's French Montana. It's also 22-8. So I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. He told me about this musician called Cyrus Knight, and this dude is from Nigel in Gauteng. Now no one comes from there and lives happily ever after. I mean, that's just what a horrible place to come from, first of all, and to have survived. I mean, Nigel. And then he started playing bass guitar for a band in Afrikaans church where he started singing and realized like music was his thing. And I'm always curious about how people find their thing. And Cyrus, it's very nice to meet you, dude. It's a pleasure. I heard your story, but I want you to tell it because I'm sure you'll tell it better. You've lived it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious. Like, you were born in Nigel and you lost both your parents at a young age, right?
Yeah, I wasn't actually born in Nigel.
Oh, okay. I apologize.
No.
No, I mean, I apologize for even insinuating you could be born in such a shithole.
Yes. Right. I'm actually originally from Joburg side.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yeah, so I was in an orphanage. And then,
how old were you when you lost your parents?
I was in an orphanage, from what I remember, about 6 years old.
Wow, dude.
It was 6 or 5 years old. And yeah, the orphanage was in Edenvale, around Edenvale's area. Yeah. And then they changed the orphanages to smaller houses. So that went all over the country. So I ended up getting moved to Nigel.
You moved to Nigel.
That's how I got to Nigel, yeah.
I mean, it's got to be like one of the hardest ways to start your life as a little kid without any parents, and you're in a an orphanage and then you get moved out to an even smaller place in like the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know anybody.
It was difficult, especially because, like, as a black kid growing up in South Africa, coming out of the apartheid era, I went to, like, I was in Afrikaans school. Like, I grew up Afrikaans all the way. So I was primary school Afrikaans and high school Afrikaans and church Afrikaans, at home Afrikaans.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was strange.
So it's sort of like you don't really know where you belong, right?
Yeah, it's strange because some people would ridicule me and be racist like that in the schools because that's how they were. And then other people are very awesome, very nice, like these Afrikaans people. And so I was very a little bit confused about it because there's nice people.
Who did you feel like the most comfortable with when you were a kid then?
I guess I had to make myself comfortable. Like, I didn't really feel comfortable at all. It's just that eventually, like, you adapt. And then I was like, okay, cool. This is the situation. I just need to deal with it.
You just have to kind of find your own strength.
Yeah. And in that, I find people who actually care. And I realized, okay, there are people that actually give a damn out here. And obviously the other people that don't. So yeah. Then I just persevered with the good and just keep on there. And I was about 15 when I decided to play guitar.
Did you just pick up a guitar and you just had this knack for it? Or did it take you a while to kind of figure out what was going on? Did you feel like you wanted to write a song? Did you often like hum tunes or sing songs to yourself? How did it start?
There was this one chick friend of mine. She started playing guitar like a year before. And I'd seen her start playing and never had interest in it. And
was she pretty?
Not really. She was okay.
All right.
She was okay.
Because sometimes that helps.
I'd say a 6 or so.
Okay. I hope she's not listening.
I hope not.
No one wants to be described as a 6. All right, carry on.
But yeah, then one day, I don't know, something in me just was just like, try to play guitar. It was the strangest thing. I just asked her if I could play her guitar because she stopped playing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got attached to it. And then a few months later, I was playing so much. And then like 8 months later, I was performing in front of the school. And then after that, the church asked me to play. But I was first playing normal guitar and the church asked me to play bass because they already had a guitarist. So then I learned bass. Like,
dude, some of the guitarists I know say that you actually have a relationship with that instrument.
Yes,
like, you fall in love with it and it goes everywhere you go.
Yeah, because it feels like an extension of yourself.
Right.
Because of the guitar being like so personal to you, it feels like you expressing yourself like properly through it.
What kind of music were you drawn to play in the beginning?
Funny enough, I was playing metal. Like
metal?
Black metal. But Christian black metal, that's the strangest thing.
That is pretty strange.
I was in the church, and obviously in Afrikaans churches in the Achies, they're very, very hardcore about music. Like what you're listening to, you shouldn't be listening to the devil's.
Yeah, because metal's the devil's music. Yes, but you were listening to gospel metal.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. And the youth pastor actually gave it to me. Because I wanted to play other bands like System of a Down and Blink-182, and then he was like, no, they're vulgar. And I was like, okay, so what can I then play? And then he gave me all this black metal, and I was like, okay, cool. It's not bad. I'll play it. And then I started learning,
And was this church band that you were in, I mean, did you guys have to practice every week, and did you get together and play other music, or was it just the church music?
It was just church music, If I wanted to play any other music, I had to do it, like,
on your own.
On the side, yeah. That's what I mean about, like, I found some Afrikaans people who are really awesome because I've made friends with a lot of them and they were listening to bands like Folk of Blizzard and The Yevils Fantasties and obviously Jack Parrow and Winter Stars and all that. And
But those very conservative people in the church were like, you can't listen to that stuff.
Yeah, so I just like kept it to myself, and then my whole goal was basically just to finish school and get out of there. Like, not that I hated there were good people there, but I just wanted to live my life eventually.
Sure.
Yeah, so as soon as I got out of school, I was like, fuck this, I'm starting a band. So I started a hard rock band, and we played a bit for like 2-3 years.
How did you put that band together?
People
you knew?
Yeah, so some people I knew, but mostly people that when I moved to Springs from Nigel, because I live in Springs now.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to Springs and I met a couple of people, and I met a guitarist and I met a drummer, and there was this other chick from Nigel who used to sing, and then we started a band together. But obviously the loyalty wasn't there because everybody had their own lives.
Yeah,
and stuff,
it's so hard because it's also, unless you're making reasonably good money, everybody's distracted by their own stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Precisely. And then,
Do most of the music in terms of writing it, or did you guys do covers?
No, we wrote original music. Like, we did practice covers, but never performed them.
And you used to write most of the music?
Yes, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Write and compose the music and stuff, yeah.
right.
Yeah, and then yeah, eventually I just realized if you want this to happen, you have to do it yourself. You have to place yourself in the driver's seat and actually just do it, because no one else is going to take you there. So then I just started recording myself and producing my own stuff, and friends started liking it, and I was like, cool,
that's fantastic. With it.
And then I met this one friend, Dylan, and my one friend, Craig. And funny enough, they were white dudes, and I was doing like metal, and they were doing hip hop.
Yeah, that some serious confusion yeah. going on here. Yeah.
And then they came into my flat one day, and they said all the guitars, and they freaked out. And then I was like, cool, nice guys. And then they told me they're doing hip hop, and then eventually we just started rapping, and I got consumed by the hip hop. And then, yeah.
That's magic.
Yeah.
So that, what did the three of you end up collaborating?
Yes, we started working together. Now my friend Dylan's in Australia. We still work together. He's going to be coming back soon. We've been working on tracks and stuff. But my friend Craig, he had stopped making music and stuff. He went a different road. Yeah, but like we used to like just rap together and just have fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, music is obviously for a lot of people, it's an escape from reality, and it's a place where you can be you, and you can have fun, and you can do interesting stuff, because, you know, it's a kind of private world, music.
Yeah, definitely.
And everybody, you know, a song means different things to different people.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
If you're writing it, that's even more intimate.
And I always felt like music kind of raised me. Like, it taught me things that normal people wouldn't be able to tell me, and open my mind to new things that I wouldn't be able to be exposed to if I had stayed in the same place and not actually went to the music.
Do you mean the lyrics? Do you mean
not just the lyrics, the whole vibe of it, from the lyrics to the feel to the way it's played, the way it's presented, and where it comes from, the mysteriousness of it. Like, music is just amazing. And I got caught up in it, and I'm still trying to figure out, like, I don't know, it's just this huge mystery for me. And I just like it, yeah. And that, like, kind of made me stronger to know, like, there's better, things are going to get better. Because music is always like that. Things always get better.
Yeah.
You know, regardless where you are in your life, like, it can always push you. So, yeah, I feel like that's, like, my parents.
So what kind of music do you make now?
Well, it's an infusion of hip-hop, acoustic, rock, drum, bass, chilled vibes. Yeah, it's
maybe like, I should just play a little bit, let people know. So here's Cyrus Knight with what's the song? This is called Who We Are. All right,
it's featuring Mal K. Yeah.
All right, let's take a listen to this, and then have you got your guitar here today?
Yes, I do.
Okay, we'll mess around with that just now. Awesome. All right, take a listen to this. This is cool, man. It's like really different. I haven't heard anything like this for a long time. This is very, very good. We're talking to Cyrus Knight. Decided to get him in here and hear his story. And at the same time, I just heard now from Cyrus that he's written 200 odd songs, but the first time you ever performed publicly was only 3 months ago.
Yeah.
So even though you've been writing songs, you've been performing sort of quietly to yourself, now suddenly 3 months ago you decided it's time?
Yeah, like I didn't really decide. I think like the time decided.
What happened?
Well, I don't know.
What kicked your ass into gear?
The label, I guess.
Oh, really? You signed to a label.
Yeah, I got signed to Filma Flow Records about 3-4 months ago.
Nice.
And then, from there, that's when I started doing my first show and stuff, yeah.
That's terrific, dude.
Yeah.
So what are the plans going forward? What do you want to do?
I want to go global. That's my plan, but for now I want to just build and make sure that everything's real. Like that the music is real, that it's raw, and you displaying to people what living is really like, not putting up a facade of the cash and the hoes.
Yeah, because people do that.
Yes, yeah.
They want to make it all about the image rather than the music.
Yes, yeah. And although the image does count, but I think artists need to start realizing what kind of power they do have, because regardless of what we're saying, there are kids listening to us, and they're going to be doing in a few years what we're saying now. So what you're going to be saying to these young ones coming up is going to make the future of the country or of music. So I just want it to be the right message.
Grab that guitar of yours. Let's see what you can do here live. Let's play around a little bit. Sia, do you want to get those mics ready for us? And we can Yeah, just move that one in, and then we'll try and create some decent sound here. There we go.
Set a bit forward here.
Yeah, there we go. That'll work. All right, everybody. Here's Cyrus Knight. Basically, he's just decided to start performing a short while ago, and we get to hear him here first. Is this the first time you've done a proper interview like this?
Yeah, first time ever.
All right, well, then we've got an this is an original, so this is going to be great. All right, whenever you're ready, man.
Okay, so this song's called Take Flight, sorry. And yeah, I wrote this about a year ago, and it's going to be releasing very, very soon.
Cool.
So enjoy.
Let's do it.
Trying to stay young, 4 in the morning, yeah, we all drunk. Got a couple good girls trying to get high, spin her legs out, take flight. Out for the night, trying to stay young, 4 in the morning, yeah, we all drunk. Got a couple good girls trying to get high, spin her legs out, ay. Smoke, took a shot, so faded, whoa, back it up. Why you hatin'? I know I gotta roll, but I'm patient. The road so cold got me anxious. I grind for the homies, grind for the family. Yo, I grind for the homies, grind for the family. Hey, all I got is this real music in my headphones. Now I reminisce, thinking back when I was just a youngin' playing on the swings, getting up to mischief, skating through my town, staring at regular faces. When them days gone, I'm trying to stay young. Like Alpha, but I'm kinda hoping I don't grow up. It's time passed so fast, tell them hold up. Roll one, toke one, pull up. Homies that know me, they know that I'm holding it down. Flowing and growing, them ladies, they're loving the style. We just out for the night, trying to stay young. 4 in the morning, yeah, we all drunk. Got a couple good girls trying to get high, seeing her excel, take flight. Out for the night, trying to stay young. 4 in the morning, yeah, we all drunk. Got a couple good girls trying to get high, seeing her excel, eh. I got a Philly full of blunt, Sprite with the vodka in my styrofoam cup. Tell them how the bitch is pulling through, it's going down. I'ma be out all night, yelling ready for the brawl. I've been training for the fight, sipping liquor, taking shots. Living in the moment for tomorrow, we may not. Take another breath, not afraid of death. Life is just this journey, don't hurry, don't worry. We gon' meet up at the end, yeah. I gotta be infinite, living my life to the fullest. Cause I know that death is imminent. With every breath I take, I feel I'm staring at me ignorant. Ready for anything under the sun, all y'all niggas limited. I'm rhyming with intelligence. Oh yes, I'm a rebel and devil, ready for anything. Versus like a reverend. Shout out to my hometown's Nigel Springs, bitch, we gon' hop ahead of them. Gotta be all up in the studio all day. You know I got the talent, I'm planning to get famous. Invaders in my lane get shut down like enemy airplanes. We just out for the night, trying to stay young. 4 in the morning, yeah, we all drunk. Got a couple good girls trying to get high, just inhale, exhale, take flight. Out for the night, trying to stay young. 4 in the morning, yeah, we all drunk. Got a couple good girls trying to get high, just inhale, exhale, take flight. Take flight.
Wow. You're a talented guy, man. This Thank is you great. Much. That's a cool song too. I hear you even give a shout out to Springs and Nigel.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
No one's
yeah.
ever done that in a song, ever. That's magnificent.
I'm glad to be the first.
Well, listen, Cyrus. I mean, all we can do is wish you the best of luck. I think if you've already got signed, that's a good start. And I'm sure we haven't heard the last of you. There's a new mixtape called Broke Days. It's on SoundCloud. The sound is diverse. In his own words, it's a place where rock and roll, hip hop, drum and bass, EDM, and acoustic live together.
Yes, that's perfect.
That's ambitious, and I like it. His dream is to make music, give back to the industry, inspire, and he's recently signed a deal with Feel My Flow, who will be helping him to take flight. That's the song you just heard.
Yes.
Take Flight. Go and take a look at his music. Look up Cyrus. You're on social media as well?
Yes, yeah. Follow me on SoundCloud and Instagram.
Good.
Cyrus K. Knight on Facebook.
Cyrus K. Knight. Got it?
Yeah, yes. Cyrus right. K. Knight.
Beautiful. All right, dude. Thanks popping by to see us this morning. No, it's an absolute pleasure. Nice to meet
you. Awesome.
All right. There we go. There's Cyrus rounding it up for us this morning. Here's the un-news, the most important stuff you need to know. First of all, Kim Kardashian has thrust herself back into the public eye. She's posted some nudes, which are creating a lot of controversy. It's not the bare breasts that are doing this. It's the cornrows on her beaver that have black people up in arms all over the world. Yes. Patricia DeLille survives to fight another day for the DA. She has been cleared of all wrongdoing. And as a welcome back, she got a 5-minute shower at DA headquarters. The only problem was that senior DA members were in the shower too to save water. Helen Ziller then used the grey water to wash her nectarines. And finally, it's almost time for Super Bowl Sunday and another chance for Tom Brady to be celebrated as the greatest in sport. In his sport. It seems retirement is still on hold despite his wife Giselle's request for him to call it a day. Turns out Tom just feels happier with his team than at home with her, as he feels less physically intimidated right there. Tells you the whole story. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9, and coming up, something brand new for you. I sat down with the BBC producer of a brilliant, brilliant documentary called Blue Planet 2. Blue Planet 2. It's a follow-on to Planet Earth and Blue Planet 1, and it's all about the oceans. It's beautifully made. It's magnificently put together. That's coming up next. Stick around for some excellent stuff on cliffcentral.com, including the Unview and plenty more this morning.
This is cliffcentral.com.